full throttle.
CFN in your face.
Comedy Film Nerds Extreme, episode 392.
Work it.
This episode is going to be so full throttle. Chris just said that like 30 seconds before we started recording, and Erin Foley, our guest, spit out her Coca-Cola.
Spit take.
It was deliciously refreshing Coca-Cola on the floor of the All Things Comedy World Headquarters. Erin, how are you doing?
I'm well. Listen, it was a little bit of a sleepy morning, but now it's full throttle.
Yes.
And I'm pretty pumped.
Nice.
Pretty pumped to be here.
We have a lot of movies we're going to talk about today. We're going to somehow we all managed to avoid Geostorm.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It's weird.
I would have seen it.
We're going to be talking about Professor Marston and the Wonder Women again. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about Goodbye Christopher Robin and Marshall and a bunch of stuff on DVD and Blu-rays. A
couple of fun trailers, Phantom Thread and Journey's End.
Yes, we're going to get into
like
those two.
Great British talking.
Yes,
riveting.
It does.
Riveting, riveting. Brit talk.
Yes.
I don't know how my contacts are still in my eyes after those trailers.
Because you don't normally like to sleep in your contacts? Or
It was so exciting. I thought they were going to just pop out.
It was great. It was so exciting.
So we have an announcement we made last week. We are going to be at the All Things Comedy Festival this weekend.
Yes.
Well, actually Thursday.
Well, so yes, at the Pop-Up Podcast Studio. That's right. This Thursday at 3 p.m. We're doing CFN Live, 3 to 4:30. Our guest is Mike Young. Mm-hmm. Who has a podcast. He's a comedian. I went to college with Mike. I haven't seen him in years.
And it's right across from Stand Up Live.
Yes. And then doing sets at the Tempe Improv that night and shows Friday. I'm doing sets Friday and Saturday.
And you're doing Doug Loves Movies.
Doing Doug Loves Movies Saturday. And Erin Foley, you guys are going to be out there doing...
Sports Without Balls. Yes. I'm sure there's a lot of... You know, people that love movies also love sports. So, yeah, we're 7:30 to 9 at the Pop-Up Studio on Saturday and stand up on Friday and Saturday. I can't wait.
Yeah. All shows in the Pop-Up Studio free to attend. So come on down.
Oh, good to know.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Yeah, it's just really cool what they did. They found like an empty store and just branded it ATC. So it's really, it's such a cool concept.
Aren't you putting it together tomorrow, Erin?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Are you driving or flying?
Oh, I gotta drive.
It's got a lot of equipment.
Oh, that's where you have all the equipment.
Yeah.
Man. So what are you, loading up a U-Haul and just driving across the desert?
All right, be careful.
Or my own vehicle.
Your own vehicle?
Yeah.
My guess is
you're not using the ATC comedy van?
The circus truck?
Yeah.
I know.
Where you can, you know, carry equipment and solve mysteries.
Isn't that what Al Madrigal and Bill Burr do? They solve mysteries?
The mystery of the entire state of Arizona, why it's in existence.
Why they don't change their clocks. I think I already know the answer to this, but whatever vehicle you take, you're getting on the 10 and you're driving east and you will be going full throttle, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes.
ATC, full throttle.
Now, Erin, just to clarify for us, what is the time change? From here to
zero.
There.
There's no time change.
There is no
they
time
did not,
change.
They did not fall back.
Yeah, so what happens to Arizona? I went to college there. So
no daylight savings.
No daylight savings. So then, but then in a couple weeks when we change our clocks, they won't change their clocks. So then they'll become on mountain time zone.
Right. They'll go, fuck it.
So they're not falling back. They sprung forward. They technically sprung forward. Right.
Right.
It's like they remain quiet and still.
Yeah. They don't do it because
so
they don't need the extra sun. Same thing with Hawaii. Hawaii doesn't change their clocks for that reason. Indiana doesn't do it because I think they just can't figure it out.
So
everyone's got a different reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dumb. That's what Indiana. Except for Bloomington.
Bloomington's fantastic.
The rest of the state
is really fantabulous.
Should we let our guest go first? Talk about Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman.
Yes,
because I know you had seen it already.
I saw that. I talked about it last week, and so I'm curious to hear Erin your take on that movie, because it was interesting for me. I'll just preface it because we did a whole spoiler episode on the actual Wonder Woman movie that came out this past summer. So to hear the history of Wonder Woman and all that, all the stuff that I didn't know there was like S&M stuff in the early issues and all that stuff. So what did you think of this film?
Well, I thought it was, I thought, what a long, like, kind of hard story to tell in, like, a two-hour movie. I thought it's Angela Robinson, who I was always a big fan of. Mm-hmm. And believe me, I'm not, like, a, you know, a film buff, you know, like, I don't know a lot of directors, you know what I mean? So it's, I get nervous talking about, like, they're like, I'm not going to sound eloquent in this way. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was almost like three movies put into one. That was like my only thing. It was a lot. But the story of this interesting coupling, I guess you could say, was so fascinating to me,
right,
that the whole time you were really enjoying it, that I almost forgot at one point. I was like, oh, are we even going to get to the Wonder Woman?
I know.
You know what I mean? At one point I was like, this is a separate movie, it felt like.
It's like Harrison Ford in Blade Runner. Like 2 hours. Let's see him.
Yeah.
No, really, it's true, because that you could just do a movie about this
love story between three people. Yeah.
That was the challenges of it happening in the 30s and 40s or whatever, and how society looked at it and just how they dealt with that. That alone was a great story. Let alone, he took ideas from this relationship and these women and wrote the most iconic female superhero, if not one of the top five superheroes of all time.
I think it was really fun to, you know, as like, you know, when you're writing a joke, sometimes you'll see this little piece and then you'll think of something. It was really fun how she kind of streamed, like, throughout the movie you'd see little pieces, mm-hmm. That, like, when she first gets into, like, sort of this bondage in New York City, this lingerie store, and then that becomes the lasso for what, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like all these little sort of pieces and their whole history as, you know, professors of psychology and submission and inducement and all this stuff that eventually became this character.
Well, now, did they go into him inventing the lie detector test too?
They did in the beginning. That was really interesting. And his wife really sort of came up with it was like the blood pressure aspect of it, because they couldn't get it quite right. And then she realized, when you're talking about something like, emotional or important, your blood pressure will go up. So that was the missing piece for the lie detector. That was the thing that
was so cool. Like, they tested it on each other. So there's, like, a lot of emotionally charged stuff. Here's a woman whose husband is saying, oh, no, I'm not in love with this. And then his blood pressure spikes and she's like, all right.
I literally was like, oh, my God, don't get some other test material. Yeah. When they all start testing on each other, I leaned over to my friend Alex. I was like, this isn't going to go well.
No, this is not going to help this couple.
Like, we all knew it's going to be like, do you want to shag my wife? Like, or do you want to, like, sleep with my husband, whatever. But so it was really, and then, you know, the lasso of truth, like all these little bits and pieces that were just kind of peppered in throughout their daily lives. And then they get fired, you know, for having this, different type of relationship, how they stayed together, how they had kids. And it all became sort of this background. They needed money. Comics were huge at the time, you know. And
yeah, he couldn't. It was so funny because, like, well, first of all, you want to talk about separate movies. I could just watch a movie on the couple that invented the lie detector machine, right? Like, just how they figured that out.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that sort of overlap with the polyamorous, you know, couple, the three of them. But that
what
was
a great word that is.
Isn't it? Polyamorous. I love it.
Yeah.
Polyamorous is a really fantastic word. It's no Full Throttle, but it's close.
It's, well, you know, I'll say this. Polyamorous is the Full Throttle of relationship words.
Yes. Yes. Yes, for sure.
But hashtag Full Throttle.
I also didn't know. I have not read the. Yeah, so that was the only thing. It was so dense. The movie was rather dense, right? It had this great relationship, this really interesting relationship, which I thought was worthy of a movie of itself. Then you've got the lie detector, and I was like, yeah, that's another movie. And then almost they're moving out of sort of the academic world to, like, suburban America and people's views of their relationships and how they sort of had a change and the splits. And then it almost, like, I kept when I left the movie, I was like, I wish that was a mini series, or I wish that was a series on Netflix, because it, the only drawback for me was like, I needed so much more of each of these moving
parts. You needed
parts.
10 episodes.
You really needed 10
episodes.
You needed
to see the kid, and in seasons 2 and 3 of this fictional series, yeah. I need to hear the 12, 13-year-old kids go,
yeah.
Hey, this is weird when I'm at school and everyone's like, you got two moms or whatever, yeah. You know, like, yeah. How was the...
And a dad.
And a dad.
And yeah. a dad.
How's the, how were the kids, you know, like...
Yeah. It was almost like the Wonder Woman part was like the last 25 minutes, almost. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
I needed, like, you know, I know Wonder Woman, but I'm not a comic book person, so I did not know that there was so much, you know, seduction, and based on his theory, the whole disc theory of, which I wrote down because I didn't want to forget it, the dominance, inducement, submission, and compliance. That was the psychology they were working on, which was the thread for Wonder Woman to empower women and to say to young, like, pubescent boys, it's okay for you to be submissive. Like, you don't have to be in charge all the time. And if more women were in charge, there'd be more peace. So all of that psychology, which was so interesting, mm-hmm. I needed a lot more. And so the comics... Because
the Wonder Woman history is its own movie.
Yeah.
Right.
yeah, exactly. So.
Well, that's probably how this project started, and then it just kind of sounds like it just branched off in a couple different directions.
And maybe you're getting to this point, and forgive me if I interrupted you, but like, the fact that it could have been three different movies, did that get in the way for you in watching it, or were you just like enthralled with all of these storylines that you liked it all the way through?
I honestly liked it all the way through. I just thought, what an undertaking. And I thought a couple of the plot lines were like, you know, could have been more or could have been, I don't know, even sexier, funnier, or more actual. I don't know, because it almost like you had to trudge through so much stuff. You know what I mean? That sometimes it
felt half throttle.
It felt half throttle. There's no other way to put it, Chris. It felt half throttle. There's a couple scenes towards the end where I was like, okay, like they broke up and came back together, and I was like, okay, let's speed this up because I need now more Wonder Woman stuff.
Right.
You know. So that, you know, it. But I mean, I read that she wrote it during the day and at night, like whenever she could, for over a period of 4 or 5 years. And then she had to raise Angela Robinson. She had to raise all this money, and they got lucky because when Wonder Woman was such a huge hit, they got the rest of the money and they shot it in like under budget in like a real small part of, you know, like 6-8 weeks or something like
right.
that. Which I thought was so interesting.
Yeah, so actually Wonder Woman coming out and doing well, I'm sure helped this film.
Sure. Yeah, I think it was the reason why it got made.
It makes me actually respect the movie more, considering that she was sort of writing this over a long period of time. Sometimes I found some films where they do that because the writer, and if it's a writer director, they're in a different headspace.
Yeah.
For a year ago, from when they're writing today to 6 months from now, that sometimes it can make a movie uneven.
Yeah.
And then the rush to production after Wonder Woman gets greenlit, that could also be a huge pitfall with, oh, it was slapped together. But the fact that they actually, because I had a similar reaction to you, I was like, there is a lot of stuff they're covering, but I was enthralled. I was engaged the whole way through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, this isn't a criticism of it, just because it's like you say, you're just the 2 hours, you're limited.
Yeah.
I was like, I want more information on the early issues of Wonder Woman.
That was because I never read them. Right. So I didn't know there was all this kind of bondage and subversive stuff going on. And I didn't know, which was really interesting to know, in the 40s, this whole backlash of, you know, it was, you know, conservatism and women's roles. And how interesting is that he sat in the table, he was defending those sort of flashbacks, he's defending the comics, and he's like, well, women can do anything, they can be president of the United States. And they were filming this while the election was going on, and then of course, you know, apocalypse. And but yeah, I wanted more. You'd get these frames of seeing the, you know, the comic book, and I was like, oh wow, like it made me want to go back and but all in women's empowerment. You know, Connie Britton, that character was really, I think she was the head of, you know, children's protection of children, whatever.
One of those, like, Christian morality.
Christian
society.
Morality, yeah. And he was like, no, this is to empower women. This is to, you know, say to young boys, like, you don't have to be in charge, and you have, mm-hmm. and so, and but she wasn't hearing any of it. She was just saw the ropes and the boobs, and that was it.
Spanking,
you know. It was, I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I just thought, oh God, this could make like such a good Netflix series.
Oh yeah, I was like, well, I can't wait to experiment with all this stuff in my next relationship. This is gonna be, we are gonna, she can tie me up, and we're gonna, yeah. she can get her truth rope out, and yeah. we're gonna, it's gonna be fantastic.
Who wouldn't want a truth rope?
Oh yeah,
I got one in my trunk.
We sell them on the Comedy Film Nerds website, guys. Yes. All major credit cards accepted.
We'll sign yeah. them.
But I did like, I think the biggest takeaway was, it was really interesting, I think, how she, you know, parts of their different relationship when they kind of stumbled upon the bondage thing, and just like, just all these different little pieces that you saw later on in the comic. And I love, it's sort of like the deconstruction of the comic through their life. And I thought that was so interesting, mm-hmm. You know, how... You know, you always want to know, well, how did you think of that joke? Or you look at a painting, you're like, I wonder how that happened. You know, so that story I thought was particularly cool.
Yeah, that's just cool. That this particular writer's creative process.
Yeah.
That, and this, you know, unique relationship for that era. Still
yeah.
Still kind of unique today, I guess. It's
And they literally needed work. I mean,
right.
His wife was a professor of psychology. She could not get a job. She started typing. Like, she was a secretary. They were like thrown out of Radcliffe, so
he was kicked out of Harvard. Like, yeah, the necessity.
That was a sister school of Harvard was Radcliffe
right.
at the time, right? Yeah, so it was just it was necessity, and he was a writer, and he wanted to implement all this psychology into it. That was really fascinating.
I love too. Rebecca Hall, who played his wife, did such a fantastic job of this, like, highly intelligent, intellectual. Feminist, and where he got so much of the Wonder Woman personality.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, literally he was dating, you know, he was in a relationship with two women, one very strong, one and one sort of more feminine, you know.
Yeah.
And he molded them together to make this character, Wonder Woman, which was just,
it was
like
the coolest.
It was so
Rebecca
awesome.
Rebecca Hall did all of them. She's, I thought the acting was phenomenal, but she in particular, I thought, oh my God, she's really fantastic.
She's so underrated. She did that movie, and I talked about it. I'm blanking on the name, based on the true story of the 70s TV reporter that, like, killed herself on TV or whatever. I forget the name of it, but that movie was like, how did this movie not get her Oscars? It just, that movie right. went under the wire. And she's always in these films where she's like, God, she's great. But
yeah,
I'm not sure why she hasn't broken through to get more Oscar buzz type of attention. Because she deserves it, because she's a fantastic actress.
Maybe Golden Globes will take a look.
At this movie, yeah. I'd love it if this got some Golden Globes. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, and just the Olive, the other woman, her story... You know, her aunt was Margaret Sanger, and her mother was also a foremost, like, feminist, and didn't have enough time to raise her because of, like, the feminist movement, that she was raised in a convent. Like,
oh, oh my God.
I totally so interesting.
That.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, that was such a great historical
Now it's
fact.
Four movies.
Yeah.
I know. Well,
that's
exactly.
There's so much stuff where you're like, I need, like, that whole upbringing. Because then you're like, oh my God, you're so repressed. Why wouldn't you be in a, like, she goes from convent to, like, you know, sleeping with him and her. I'm like, good for you. Make it up for lost time.
Convent to sex hippie house.
Yeah.
That's from Full Throttle.
That's
total Full Throttle.
No, but that was such, God, I totally forgot that. I'm so glad you brought that up. That's such a powerful moment in the movie that is just sort of brought up and then that's it.
Yeah.
Where she goes, yeah, my mom is this and my aunt is that. And again, I forget the names. But Rebecca Hall and Luke Evans both go, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, their minds are blown. They're like, we worked on that movement. We were like,
Your mom was part of the suffrage, like, the two most prominent feminists of the last 20 years? Are
Yeah.
She's just like.
It was really cool. Yeah. It was just really interesting. I really was captivated the entire time. The only knock was like, oh God, I wanted more of everything.
Right.
Mm. But I thought she did such a good job considering all that content. Like, what do you choose? Like,
right.
It's mind-boggling.
All right. So moving on.
Aaron, did you have something to...
I was just going to say Christine was the name of the movie that Rebecca Hall was in about the reporter.
Oh. It's that movie, as I talked about, I don't know whenever I watch it, but...
Not to be confused with the evil car movie.
I literally was like, oh, isn't that a car movie?
Yeah, she's a crazy car.
And then she kills herself in her car.
No, but watch that movie. That's if you want to see a really great Rebecca Hall, because it's her movie. She's the lead, and she's fantastic in it.
So the next movie is Goodbye, Christopher Robin. Now, I saw this film. This is the story of A.A. Milne and his son, C.R. Milne, and how Winnie the Pooh was created.
Now, so based in another kind of...
Another biopic-y.
Okay,
kind
we've
of,
got three,
kind of,
three biopics
yeah,
on the slate
kind of
today.
Now, this one also was a... this one is definitely positioned and gearing up for Oscar season.
Really?
So we're starting to see it. And, you know, Margot Robbie does a really good job. She plays the mother. And you could tell she took this role of like, all right, I got to make sure people don't just think me as of Harley Quinn. Think of me as Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad.
Or just always the blonde bombshell.
Or always the blonde bombshell. Like, this was like the one where like I finally get to act. And she does a good job in it. She's cold. She's not the best mother. She's not the best wife. There's one scene in the film where A.A. Milne, who is a writer, and he moves his family out into the countryside. He's shell-shocked from World War One. He was a soldier in World War One, and
this is played by Domhnall Gleeson,
who does a fantastic job. And at one point, she says, "You're not even writing. I'm leaving. I'm going back to London. And then when you start writing, I'll come back." And so she kind of leaves. But then when she comes back, like, he kind of asks, like, well, what have you been doing this whole time? And she's like, does it matter? I'm here now. And I'm thinking, yeah, it kind of does.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's a big gap. It's a big time jump.
It does what you've been up to.
He's shagging all of London?
Yeah.
You working? What's happening?
What's going on?
So
what's your diary say?
What I really liked about it is it showed just, like, the different facets of each of these characters. And the son... Christopher Robin, they actually use a number of different child actors to show the age progression. So it's not the same character. It's not the same actor throughout. Now, the bulk of it is when he's young and Winnie the Pooh actually gets creative. But what is also really fascinating about this movie is that it shows what celebrity looks like in the early 1900s. You know, before the internet, before computers, before YouTube. And it was, Winnie the Pooh was such a worldwide phenomenon. And one of the reasons, too, you see, and then the film sets this up beautifully, is that it was the right thing at the right time, where they were just getting out of World War One. Everyone was bleak and despairing, especially in England. And then this kind of hopeful children's stories started being published where everyone, including the adults, could enjoy them. And what was funny about it was that it wasn't A.A. Milne that they all wanted to talk to. It was the son, Christopher Robin, who the stories were based on.
Oh.
So it was the type of celebrity, but for a child. Like, all the reporters, like, you know, it was back in the time where it wasn't a film crew that would show up to your door.
It was a
newspaper reporter and a photographer with a giant camera.
Right.
You know, and that's what it was. Like, well, you know... And when they came to the house, they're like, well, no, we don't want to talk to the writer. We want to talk to Christopher Robin and ask him about Pooh and, you know, and all these things. So the film, and this is on IMDb. This is a little bit of trivia. The film is actually a fairly accurate portrayal in the relationship between Christopher Robin, Milne, and his parents. However, although the film depicts the older Christopher Robin finally forgiving his father for exploiting him to sell the book, in reality, Christopher Robin never actually forgave him the way depicted in the film, instead learning to accept what had happened and live with it right up until he died in 1996.
Oh, wow.
However, his frosty relationship with his father was at least better than the one he had with his mother, because he really felt that his mother was the one that exploited him even more, which was interesting. So you look at, like, the shades and parallels of child actors and child actresses now, and then the way the parents are exploiting
them. So a lot of it
them.
Focuses on how this kid had to deal with celebrity
yes,
in that era?
It definitely focuses on that. It focuses on the family dynamic, and it focuses on, like A.A. Milne, I didn't know this, like, he was a writer, and he wanted to write, like, anti-war things. Like, he was really, you know, like I said, they showed him shell-shocked from being, you know, that's the old word for PTSD when they came back from the war. These aren't really spoilers. This is all standard stuff for the story. What There is some a weird, and I won't spoil this at the end. Towards the end, there's a weird way they build tension in like a misdirection kind of way that wasn't necessary. Like the story is compelling on its own. We don't need to add that you know the quote Hollywood stakes, you know, like the movie.
So we wanted to write anti-war stuff and then wound up writing Winnie the Pooh.
Yes, he wound up writing Winnie the Pooh. And then he wore
that's
after that.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah, so and then after he was done writing the Winnie the Pooh stories, then he actually did write an anti-war book. But
where
he was also
Pooh
a playwright.
Dies at war.
Yeah.
Pooh in the trenches.
But clearly none of his works ever even came close to the popularity of Winnie the Pooh. Now, this is also... it only focuses on the books. It never gets into the Disney years or the rights issues or anything like that. This is solely focused on him, his son, and his wife and the creation of these stories. And it's a really well-acted film. It's a well-put-together film. And there's definitely going to – I'd be surprised if it got no Oscar buzz. Like, I really feel like, especially when we just mentioned, like, the Golden Globes, like, this feels like that. You know, Hollywood Foreign Press is really going to eat up a story like
this.
What
nominations do you think will come out of this?
I think the nominations to come out of this will be acting. I think it'll be
Margot Robbie.
I think Margot Robbie might get for supporting, and I also think Domhnall Gleeson might get one for lead actor. Mm-hmm. I mean, really solid performances. The movie does meander a little bit, and like I said, it does a couple weird things at the end. Like I don't see it necessarily for best picture or best direction, although it's, you know, it's a period piece, it's lavish, it's lush, and there's attention to detail and what London and what the countryside and what everything looks like. But at the end of the day, this movie really rests on its performances, which are very good. And all the kids who play Christopher Robin at the different ages, they're all really solid too. There's at least, I think there's at least three. There might even be more if you count like the baby, you know? So
great baby acting.
Yeah.
So good.
There's nothing like a good baby
so,
actor.
And it's also, you know, you look at like the casting and like how Hollywood kind of plays with ages a little bit. Like, here's another piece of trivia. Like, A.A. Milne was actually 38 years old, and his wife, Daphne, was 30 when Christopher Robin was born. In reality, Domhnall Gleeson was 33 and Margot Robbie 26 when filming was commenced. That also means that Robbie was actually only 5 years older than Alex Lawther, who played the adult Christopher Robin.
Oh, Hollywood.
So they play around with that, although it is a British film. So it really is a solid actor piece for sure. And when you see biopics, that's what a lot of times you have biopics that are either really rest solely on the performances. You have them sometimes rest solely on the stories and the actual events that transpire. This one for sure lands squarely in the performance range. So it's worth a look. Now, do you need to see it on a big screen? No, you don't need to see it on a big screen. But it's definitely it's a great actor showcase for everybody in this film.
All right. So I saw a biopic. It was a big biopic week. I saw Marshall.
This is based on
Thurgood Marshall's life.
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman plays Thurgood Marshall. And it really just focuses on this
Black Panther.
The only black actor that they'll cast to play a biopic, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, if I was a black
isn't
actor,
isn't it like it's like his fourth one?
He's
right?
A really good actor, but if I was in Hollywood, I'd be like, come on, man! Like, he gets everyone. Like, all right, I guess he's gonna play Frederick Douglass. And he's gonna play Langston Hughes now. Like, those are our only options. So it was like,
I'm drawing the line at James Baldwin.
It's so.
He's gonna play Morgan Freeman in the next movie.
This movie, it focuses on this one specific trial in 1941 about a white woman played by Kate Hudson who accuses a black man of raping her. And the case is, you know, did he, and Sterling K. Brown plays the guy that is accused of raping her. And so the question is, there's a lot of question marks here. Like, you know, what really happened? Is this the classic, you know, she had consensual sex with him and is afraid she's going to get caught for sleeping with a black man, you know, like all that stuff. So they go into that and they show.
Is it clear, like what happened? Like, do they make, well, do they let the audience in on it?
Eventually, yeah.
Eventually,
I mean,
okay.
Eventually. So they go through the whole case. Because, I mean, this case is a matter of public record. So if you wanted to, you could Google it and find out.
Mm-hmm.
But they really go into, it's the early days of the NAACP. And he's like their only lawyer. So he's literally just going around all these cities all over the country defending people that he feels have been wrongly accused. Like, mm-hmm. So, and then he teams up with Josh Gad, who plays.
From Frozen?
From Frozen, from, and he's still in his Frozen character. He's an animated guy. It doesn't make sense. That's very Roger Rabbit. I don't know why the director chose this. But no, he plays Sam Friedman, who's an actual lawyer, you know, that ended up being really big into civil rights litigation and stuff like that. So the problem with this film, and this is the problem I have with a lot of biopics, is when it feels like they didn't do enough research.
Oh, okay.
It feels like they got the broad strokes and then they just plug in Hollywood cliches throughout all of this.
To get to the next plot point.
Right. And the director, there's Reginald Hudlin has directed a lot of comedy and a lot of TV, and I think it tries to be too funny at times. Not that it needed to be super serious, but there's a lot of just like quippy banter that felt like, really, Thurgood Marshall and this guy Sam Friedman in 1941 were just like wisecracking their way through this thing while the Klan wants to kill them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I felt like I really want to say, like, you guys should have got the court transcripts and just like pulled that out of, and then you could have built more from that. I just this is it just felt like a Hollywood by the numbers biopic. We got to have this scene, we got to have that scene, we got to have the music come up here, we got to have, you know what I mean? And I was just
which
like,
is why a movie fails,
right
it's always the one where it's like
it tries to
so
shove into the
true
formula.
Yeah, the ones I think resonate are the truest account of the story.
Well, Professor Marston is a great example. Yeah. Like, that's a true story. What if they would have that didn't feel Hollywooded up to me. It felt like they got a lot of, and now I know that, like, the granddaughter of Marston came out publicly and said, this is nonsense, this never happened, I don't know. And then the director said, actually, this is all, a lot of this stuff happened. We took license with a couple things.
Yeah.
But that's why, like, the Professor Marston movie felt more authentic, because it was like,
well, there's photos of them at the end, and the women, by the way, spent the last 38 years of, after he passed away, they were together for 38 years.
38 years.
So, and there's a photo of them, so I don't know how you could say that didn't happen.
Right. Well, that's, I feel like the granddaughter might be dealing with some shame issues from some other stuff, whatever. Yeah, but,
let's call her up. Hold on.
But no, the thing that I liked about Marston and Sally is it was like, wow. They really had to deal with that, and it felt like they had enough factual information where I was just like, I just felt like I could, this, you could have
felt like studio noted.
Well, I felt like I could have been watching any courtroom drama that's ever happened.
I got you. Yeah.
Focusing on anything, you know, and also, you know, and they, again, at the end of the movie, they do the thing that they do a lot of biopics, which is fine. I sort of like it and expect it, and I don't care that it happens at everyone. They show the actual photos, and they show the statistics of Thurgood Marshall. He fought this case, he got on the Supreme Court. The photo, Thurgood Marshall was a tall man. He was a kind of a guy that walked into a room and commanded it, right?
Yeah.
Chadwick Boseman is a really good actor. I'm super pumped up for Black Panther. I'm 5'10". I think Thurgood Marshall was probably 6'3", 6'4". You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's a thing.
And a more towering presence.
Towering presence. And he just sort of came in, and I feel like they just, you know, got some information that, you know, Thurgood Marshall was pretty confident and pretty full of himself. And so they just, like, gave him this Hollywood version of that.
Maybe Chadwick Boseman in an apple crate?
Yeah. So it just... I don't know. I kind of was like, I really wanted more. And I was.
Because they have all the, it's not like they don't have all the research and the court documents and all of it. You
know,
you're not like, oh God, fishing for information on Thurgood Marshall.
There's some stuff to draw from.
Yeah.
And so the two writers, Jacob Kozkoff, and, you know, they wrote the Mark Pease experience and they wrote the Macbeth screenplay. Very wide range of stuff. So I just, and then I saw all of these giant, they got a lot of money from China. I'm watching in the credits, all of these like Chinese producers and Chinese companies. It almost, and I was like, maybe that's what I'm, can't put my finger on. I almost felt like it was someone from another country going, this is our interpretation. I know the director is an American, but like, it felt like it had, you know, like when some foreign filmmakers, they go, this is what we think America was like.
Yeah.
And it did, I don't know. There was just something, it was just always a little off. And I was like, I didn't.
Spaghetti Westerns.
It just didn't feel authentic enough. It didn't feel. And again, I think they just missed an opportunity to go into the court records and all this stuff. You could have really brought actual stuff in there versus just plugging in Hollywood cliches to get from this plot
point A to point
yeah,
B.
Yeah, yeah. So it's,
well, if it was like a Chinese-funded American Hollywood-esque biopic, that's what you got. Instead of...
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
Something meaty and interesting.
Yeah. So it wasn't... It could have... And it's like this guy's life deserved better. I mean, Thurgood Marshall. And I... Focusing on this one landmark case, I see why you would... All right, so how do we, like, the dilemma we, you and I, Aaron, both had with Professor Marston is, wow, there's so much to cover in just 2 hours. I understand, like, Thurgood Marshall, like, lived a full life.
There's a whole lifespan.
He lived, he was on the Supreme Court, like, so many landmark cases. So I understand, like, well, let's just focus on the first big win that he got that kind of put the NAACP on the map and all that other stuff.
Well, maybe this was a prequel.
Yeah. I just wanted more. I just, like... Hollywood, I think, just goes, someone goes, I own the life rights to this guy, biopic, plug it in,
punch
it into the computer and print out the script and let's go. That's what it felt like. Mm. Yeah. So it deserved a little more.
All right. So now we have our much anticipated ad reads.
Oh, God, yes.
So first we have our Patreon ad read, Frightfully Uninformed. And this is the podcast that explores horror movie fandom. And this is the Patreon level at $50. You get the ad read every episode.
Every episode, even the spoiler eps.
Mm-hmm. And also, our sponsor today is ZipRecruiter. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. You know, you want great talent for your business, but you don't have a lot of time. You want them to come to you. So, you don't want to go through a huge stack of resumes. You just want to find the best tool. And what ZipRecruiter does, it puts the smart matching technology to work, actually notifying qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting so you can get the best matches.
And by best tool, you mean like an actual tool, not like, oh, let's find the best idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, I'm just making sure I understand that correctly. Okay, right. Like, if you really want a moron to work, they can really good at finding tools.
Yes. And
this will help you find a good employee.
Yes.
This is what you want. ZipRecruiter is fantastic at making you find the best employee.
It really is.
And I misread it. Thank you for clarifying.
And it's an aggregator. So, you know, you just do ZipRecruiter and then it goes to all the different sites for you.
It's one of those things, too. We talk about this a lot. I know a lot of you guys run your own business or whatever. This is the
Or you're planning to.
You're planning to run your own business or you have a little, like we understand about having a little business in a garage and you're expanding. And you get to that point where it's like, well, we can't just hire buddies or people we know. We really need to find
an actual employee.
We need to find the best candidate. And, you know, we can't afford some giant headhunting company.
Right.
So you go to ZipRecruiter.com.
You can't just hire a fan.
No.
I'm right here, you guys.
I'm sorry. Aaron's done a fine job. He put together the ATC mystery machine.
Yes.
And it's really, he's going to drive it across the desert.
Yep. And he's going to do a pop-up studio every 10 miles.
And just go, is this work? Is this thing on? Hello, Papa?
So why don't you guys try ZipRecruiter for free? That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/CFN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/CFN and try it for free.
All right.
All right. Now, what do we got coming up?
We got some trailers.
We got some trailers. Let's talk about these trailers, shall we? This is the next Paul Thomas Anderson movie called Phantom Thread. First of all, full disclosure, no phantoms in it. No. This is about the fashion industry in the 50s.
In London.
In London. So this movie is for maybe four people.
It literally, if Paul Thomas Anderson's name wasn't on it, I wouldn't have even finished watching the trailer.
Right. Because
it just seems like...
First of all, I accidentally had Wes Anderson in my head for a quick second. No, not Wes Anderson. Who's the one that I love that does all the Royal Tenenbaums?
That's Wes Anderson.
Okay.
Wes Anderson,
so
yeah.
I had Wes Anderson. And so I was like, when is it going to be quirky and funny? Yeah. The whole time. And I was like, oh, wait, Paul, that's Boogie Nights and the Oil.
Yeah, there will be one.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. But
Boogie Nights and the Oil. That's not
I'm coming pretty hot with my film knowledge. but that was the trailer.
And is he the only director that Daniel Day-Lewis will work with now?
Yeah,
I think so.
What it is.
That
fashion in the 50s. I'm going to kill you and your entire family.
I found a dress and I drank it up. I don't know. I like.
Do we know what the movie is about after the trailer? I was hoping for murder.
Yeah.
You were watching. You were like, is he going to throw her off the ledge or whatever?
What was that line? He used all of me, or he?
He used. I gave him every part of me.
And I was like, oh, sweet. Oh. Is it going to be like, oh, there's an arm in the living room? Right. Is it going to be like he's a psychotic murderer?
She's going to be kept in the basement, and he's going to only try dresses on her that he wears.
It felt a little Buffalo Bill. Like, I was like, ooh, are we getting Buffalo Bill out of here? But I think he didn't.
Put the lotion in the bucket.
It really felt like...
About size 14.
It didn't know where to go. Like, even the trailer editor was like, well, I'm stumped. I don't even know what to put in here.
We're still filming.
Yeah, a relationship. It's going to go bad. And like we were saying, the high stakes of the movie seem to be, are you trying to ruin my entire evening? Yes.
Yeah, it's like, wow, that's a...
Wow, okay.
I only have a limited number of evenings.
Yes. Yeah, Chris, you were like, boy, those are high stakes.
Yeah.
You've ruined my dinner plans.
How dare you?
Bum, bum, bum.
I still don't really know what it... I mean, it. Obviously, he's a dressmaker. And something goes south.
Yeah,
he's
a fashion designer. Then he puts little hidden messages in his clothing sometimes. And
fashion
then,
guy has a bad relationship. He has a bad breakup
with a waitress.
It felt a little bit odd for Paul Thomas Anderson.
It's an odd choice for sure. Like, you know, at least it didn't have Paul Dano being creepy in it though.
I actually would have preferred that.
Yeah,
right?
I was just waiting for like a. Something to happen.
Like a shark.
Like something.
Anything. Anything.
At least one land shark.
Yes.
Something.
In
an
a
army approaches.
Tired,
yeah.
Tailored suit.
But there are a couple of, and again, I'm not like a film, you know, nerd like you two, but there are a couple directors where you're like, I'll see anything.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he is really one of them.
And
it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, you know, now he's going to test that theory.
Yeah.
In this film.
Really pushing that limit.
Will Aaron go?
I feel the same way. Yeah. Oh, Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis, I'm in. And then you show me that trailer. I'm like,
not be in as much now.
Is there an international flight 6 months from now I can watch it on?
Right.
And I still probably won't finish it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
at least put like a real wacky, like, it'll have you in stitches.
Yeah.
Do some real dumb at the end.
You'll thread the needle with this love story.
Just give me like three puns.
It'll have you in stitches. It just whomp, bow, like the very end becomes just a wacky comedy.
Just something.
Benny Hill, they speed this.
Daniel Day-Lewis like right to camera like, go watch it.
All right, the other trailer.
Next trailer is Journey's End. This looked like a British acting reel for the most part. It was, you know, it's based on a play that I believe is also then based on a book, maybe. It was like, how many things was it based on?
And based on World War One.
And based on World War... Was it World War One?
Yeah, it's World War One. Trench Warfare.
Which may or may not have happened.
Yeah.
Fact check that whole war. Pretty unconvincing.
So,
Looks like a lot of scenes of a guy saying, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
There were a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I guess talking, you know, talking, I don't know. Part
Talk
of me-
about a by the numbers trailer, though. That really was completely by the numbers. We're like, all right, you're showing war. You're showing characters getting agitated. Someone's going to get thrown up against a wall. And sure enough, that happened.
Yeah, and then obviously the, like, you're going to have to run out of this trench. I just feel like, just go watch Gallipoli and from the 80s, which is a fantastic movie about World War One. And I don't know. I don't know. Part of me, I just had this impression. It just popped into my head when we were watching the trailer. And I just was like.
Now, it could be the trailer's fault. It could be. This could be like a really well-acted, you know, piece.
I'm sure it's well-acted.
Yeah.
But also, I just kind of felt like, I don't, maybe this is just me. I just was like.
It could just be the play in a trench.
Well, I went, exactly. It's a stage play that they put in a trench, and it's going to feel like a stage play.
Right.
You know, when we talk, when we say a stage play, and they didn't expand, I don't know. But I just was, part of me was like, I think I'm done watching war movies.
There was nothing new or captivating about that trailer. I also hate when trailers, every 10 seconds, they'll put the review in. Like, it'll be 5 stars, and it'll be like, this is a great war movie. And then one scene, someone gets shot. Like, there were 7 of those.
Yeah.
Of, like,
and they were
that makes you want to feel something that you're clearly not feeling.
And they were too small to read who they were actually from. You know, you just see the stars. 4 stars from.
I find that distracting.
Oh, that font got really small, who it's from now.
Because it was from the Leeds.
I like the one that said, amazing British performances.
Yeah.
So, are they pretending to be British?
So they hired American actors to do British accents? I would love that.
Also, you got to give me, if it's a war film, which is, you know, not my jam, but I like some of them, you got to give me, like, some sort of fun twist. I was like, how does that boy know that soldier?
Sure.
What is the twist?
And I think,
and it seemed like he came over to the house for tea a couple times, and I was like, oh, come on. Be in love with him or something.
Something. Mm-hmm. Something. Like, what is it? You're his son and he didn't know or something. I mean, that's the other thing, too. I felt like nothing from that trailer. And, Chris, you might be right. It might be an amazing movie that talks about war and specifically World War One in a way we haven't seen. Maybe.
Sure.
Right.
I didn't get it from that trailer.
Well, the trailer didn't have that in it.
It felt like the kid went to war to, like, just get back in touch with his buddy.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's so many other ways.
And all these guys are, like, haggard by war.
You can fill out a form to get into the same trench as your pal.
Yeah. And this kid is just like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm in a trench. And all these guys are like, what are you doing here? We're all going to die. I don't know.
Yeah. We were sent here to die. Like, there was a lot of the voiceover quotes to, you know, to try to engender feelings and all the stuff. Like, it really felt, the trailer to me felt really forced. Like, it really felt like a forced trailer. So I'll still give the movie the benefit of the doubt, but the trailer, neither trailer made me want to go,
no.
I can't wait to see this movie. So,
if you had to pick one, which one are you guys gonna go see?
Oh, wow,
that's a rough.
I come to this podcast with some hard questions.
Yeah,
you are just really.
I think I might watch Gallipoli.
Yeah, that's what I would suggest. Go see Gallipoli from the 80s. It's a fantastic Australian movie.
So, should we talk about?
Aaron.
A sports movie.
You obviously you're a big sports fan. I've been on your show, which I love. We talked about the Sparks before they lost in the finals.
One of my favorite episodes. You and I talking WNBA,
which I could do. I've said to you, if I like had the money or I build up my own YouTube channel enough, we're gonna do
buy the Sparks.
That for sure. We're gonna buy the Sparks, and but we're gonna. I would love to do a weekly This Week in the W show where we just break it down. Because the thing you and I talked about on your podcast, the frustration we have as WNBA fans, there's not enough coverage.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, I don't know who's injured. I don't know who got traded.
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on? You watch a game, you're like, why is she not playing?
I have to like comb ESPNW.com for any reports.
And you get
reports.
Some weird, vague thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, God damn it.
Yeah.
And so like when I watch the games, part of me is especially the ones that were on ESPN. I'm like, oh, I got to watch the halftime because at halftime I'm going to get something about what else is going on in the league. But so you're obviously a huge sports fan. What are your favorite sports movies? Yes, we're getting season tickets to the Sparks next year. We went to a game.
Done.
I got to say
done.
This real quick. We went to a game. Me, you, Trish Sir, who I love and known for years, and Scout Redwood, who I just met.
Derwood.
Yeah, we're changing the name.
Redwood is her middle name.
Network wants to change her name.
Scout Redwood Derwood.
That was so much fun.
So much
that
fun.
That was such a blast. It was game four of the finals. We had such a blast. It was, I mean, they didn't win.
We should have. Like, it was electric because they could have won the championship.
Yeah, we could have saw the trophy ceremony.
I have been to 7 million sporting events, never been at, like, the winning championship game. And I was like, this is it.
I've only done that once. I went to the Super Bowl once
and
saw that happen. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. But a five-game series or a seven-game series, that would be nuts.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right.
Anyway,
so your favorite sports movie.
I would have to say The Natural is right up there. You know, it's nostalgic, and also I remember watching it with my parents, who are huge baseball fans, and my mom's like, you know, in love with Robert Redford, who isn't. Just the acting was so good. Kim Basinger, that weird plot twist that you never saw coming with like the silver bullet, or I'm still confused by some of that. But that last scene with the sun and the playing cat, like just tears.
It's Barry Levinson directed it. It's based on Bernard Malamud's book. Came out in 1984. Literally one of my, not just sports movies, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, for sure.
I saw that in the theater. I remember I went to the movie with my mom and stepdad, and it was so crowded that, like, I sat alone, and I was, like, maybe 15 or something like that, and was, like,
Before assigned seating.
Before assigned seating. It was at the Old Orchard Cinema, which had big, comfortable seats way before theater started doing that. Mm-hmm. And first of all, the fantasy of it, you know, the magical bat, the music,
the lightning, the bolts on the, and then the kid is wearing the bolt. Like, it just, it had every, you know, it was, I think it, I watch so much sports that I honestly don't gravitate to a lot of sports movies. But that one to me felt like the best balance of like drama, storytelling, and sports. You know, like, you didn't have to be a sports fan to love The Natural.
Right.
And I love when it gets that, you know, balance. And of course, A League of Their Own, I've watched probably 790. Yeah. I mean, I'm in a fantasy baseball
league.
There's
no crying in baseball.
It's just, you repeat it, and my team is the Rockford Peaches. Like, have gone so deep. And, you know, I know it's a lot of baseball stuff. Well, Hoosiers, obviously, Hoosiers. But the one I literally probably that I just cannot turn off is just always Major League. I love that movie. I mean, ball four, ball eight, he is walk the side. Like, I think
well,
that
it's Bob Uecker.
It's just funny.
Who was the Milwaukee Brewers announcer, maybe still is. So he's hilarious. They just let Bob Uecker be all alone in the booth, just doing whatever he wants. There's great stuff in that. But I want to go back to Hoosiers. I put Hoosiers in The Natural. Like,
Hoosiers
is, you know, that also has music that I get chills from.
And Dennis Quaid, right? Dennis Quaid's character.
No. Right? Dennis Hopper.
Dennis
Hopper.
Oh, God, I apologize.
Dennis Quaid.
Thoroughly, thoroughly apologize.
So Dennis Quaid from Family Vacation,
yes,
isn't it?
That's what I meant. He shows up in a camper van.
That's Randy
that
Quaid.
That tragic.
Isn't Randy
Quaid? Oh, yeah, that
is
Randy
Quaid. Quaid.
I'm like 0-8. Charlie Sheen's role in Hoosiers was no, but that role I thought was like
the alcoholic dad.
The alcoholic dad, and then he's like, you know, and I grew up like basketball was like my main sport.
You played it in college.
Played in college, yeah. And then all these years later, I was performing at the Comedy Attic in Bloomington, and I'm on stage and I'm talking about you know, Hoosier basketball, because you know I'd watched it for so long. And there was the assistant to a female head coach of the women's team was in the crowd. Her name is Julie Force. And she was like, I'll take you on a tour. And I was like, this isn't a joke. Like, I will meet you. She picks me up, and we did a tour of the Indiana basketball facility.
Oh, that's
I got
cool.
on the court. It was like full Hoosiers movie. This was just last year, and I like lost my mind.
That those kind of things are why being a road comic is amazing. There's a lot of travel. There's a lot of crap. The bullshit.
But
you when is that ever going to happen? What if you
amazing.
Were a salesman?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, or you just had some job, or I sell pharmaceutical stuff, and I'm going to come to your town, and I travel a lot. There's no other thing where you're going to be on a stage, and people are going to think you're awesome, and then go, oh, I'll give you I remember in Evansville, Indiana, I was living in Chicago, and some people took me horseback riding.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? When am I going to just free horse? Oh, we own horses.
It's that. I mean, those experiences.
People take you out on their boat.
Bloomington, especially,
we did
though.
That in a, I think we did that in Tahoe.
And Lake Tahoe took us out on the boat.
Yeah.
In Bloomington, though, specifically, that town. So Aaron, who listens to this show, they have a gymnastics studio. So we got to go do gymnastics at their studio. They took me to a vegan restaurant.
Cool.
I was talking when I used to talk about doing martial arts in my act. These two people were like, oh, we work at a studio. So I would go anytime I was in Bloomington, I'd go do martial arts with them.
It's the greatest town in America is Bloomington.
Fantastic.
I'm so obsessed with Bloomington, Indiana. And the owners, these two women that own the back door bar, which is a gay bar, right across, like, diagonal. I just literally go from there. I do my shows, and I go across the street to back door. And there's always, like, some great show on. Like, then all of a sudden I'm getting a tour of the basketball.
The iconic basketball. I sang one time, the bar next door was like, oh, there's live band karaoke. And I was just like, wait, what? Like,
it's
huh?
The greatest.
Yeah,
I love
you
it.
You stay in that little downtown square.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. All right. So watch Hoosiers, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you this. Here's another great sports movie Bloomington moment. When we were at the Limestone Festival, whatever that was,
right.
three or four years
Comedy
ago,
Festival.
Which was fun. It was a blast. I was on, Doug did a movie interruption. Doug Benson did a movie interruption. He did Breaking Away.
He did Breaking Away?
Mm-hmm. In Bloomington, we're at the,
yeah.
the
crowd went wild.
The crowd went wild. The scene in the movie where they, in the movie, they sing the Indiana fight song.
Forget
the
it.
Whole crowd joined in.
That's
and like,
so
I'm
awesome.
Like in tears. It was the most charming little Midwestern college town moment.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
That's so cool.
That's Bloomington.
You know what I also love real quick? American Anthem. Do you remember that one?
Wow.
That I was like a sucker for Mitch Gaylord. Oh, God. Yeah. Yep.
The gymnastics movie.
Wow. Holds up.
Did you ever watch Gymkata?
No.
Oh, that is.
What was the tag on that one?
God, all right, we're gonna Gymkata. We're gonna bring that up. That was Kurt Thomas. That came out in 1985. This was the thrill of gymnastics with the kill of karate.
No.
Gymkata. Greatest movie.
Insane.
He goes, he's a karate gymnast. So gymnastics were big in the 80s. So they were like, we got to get Kurt Thomas in a movie. No, you don't.
Right.
No, you don't. No one said you should do that. Not a good idea.
There's ninjas all over the poster. No ninjas in the movie.
No ninjas.
Mm-hmm. Is it G-Y-M?
G-Y-M-K-A-T-A.
Right, for gymnastics, then
gym
kata.
And then
kata.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
He goes undercover to a Russian blah, blah, blah. Prison, maybe we'll call it mental institution. In the the classic prison fight where he's in the yard, in the courtyard, just happens to be a pommel horse.
No,
in the middle of
no.
spins around and it just Gymkata kicking dudes in the face.
Yep,
all for America.
That's I'm gonna literally go home and watch that immediately.
Watch Hoosiers, you guys, and watch Gymkata. If you do anything else this
week, that's a palate cleanser. So we've got a bunch of movies on DVD and Blu-ray. Now, this is an interesting bunch because some of these, I feel like they were just in the movie theaters, and some of them were like, oh, they were in the movie theaters a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
War for the Planet of the Apes, this one is finally coming on DVD. This again, these movies are just really fun, interesting movies.
They're great social commentary. I think they really picked up where the very first one that was written by Rod Serling in 1969. Mm-hmm. They're retconning of the social commentary of those movies from the 70s is pretty amazing.
And it's also, it's the way you make a popcorn movie. You know, it's still talking fighting apes, but, you could make it fun and interesting and not insult your audience at the same time.
Aaron?
It's great. Loved it. See it again. Go apes.
Go apes! All right. Aaron's a pro ape guy. All right.
Go cards and go apes.
Go apes.
I'm learning
and
a lot.
Okay. Annabelle Creation is the next one, obviously, because it's Halloween. You're going to see more the DVD releases. Now, this one was just in the theaters.
David S. Sandberg, who was on the show talking about it. So check that out.
And the next one is the emoji.
He was at PodFest, by the way.
Oh, was he?
Him and his wife were at PodFest. It was great to see him.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. Oh, I missed him. I missed him. Yeah. To say hi. The emoji movie also came out. I don't know anyone has seen it. I don't know.
I was going to go, and then I decided to do everything else but that.
Yes.
So I have not made it.
I will say this too. My kids not really begging to see it.
Like really?
That is a very telling sign.
Yes. Next movie is An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power. This is Al Gore's sequel.
I saw it.
On a plane?
No. I saw it in the theaters when it came out. It's a really cool film, and the one thing that it does, I think, better than the first one is he's no joke. He's like, it's for real. Like, we're serious, but then does a good job of, like, because this is the biggest problem, I think, in environmental documentaries, is they end on this, like, we're all screwed note. So people just, it can make someone go, wow, I'm going to just check out. I'm not going to do anything. He gives you, like, here are the serious problems we're facing. It's no joke.
Yeah.
But here's some good that's happening. Here's some people really getting shit done. He invites you to sign up for his leadership thing, which I signed up for, got turned down, whatever. But
that's really hopeful. That's awesome. I want to see that. I really want
to
see that.
You have to see it because the hopeful and what can I do as just one person.
Yeah.
It really can give you some guidance on that.
And also, you know, email and say, hey, why was I turned down?
Well, they told me, I mean, because of the movie, they got flooded. Like, tens of thousands of people for signing up for like 200 slots or something like that.
I'm going to email saying in the subject heading, following up RERE Graham Elwood. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to see if I can get you a slot.
Thank you. I'm going to follow up.
You know, someone's dropped out.
I'm going to say RE Jim Cotta.
Yes.
Will there be a pommel horse at the hotel?
I love that there's a pommel horse.
There's no reasonable explanation for it.
It's like the 80s. It's like the greatest. You're just like, what?
He's a gymnast, so we better have him at a pommel horse.
And it's a thinly disguised pommel horse, too. It's like, well, we can't just have a pommel horse in the middle of this courtyard. They kind of try to dress it up a little bit.
It's also a picnic table.
Yes.
Okay, but with two handles on it.
Right.
And it's rooted into the ground so that a 200-pound person can fly around on it and it won't move.
Yeah, come on.
Like every picnic table you've ever seen.
There are funds allocated for all kinds of different things.
A Russian prison mental institution has a different type of courtyard than you might be used to.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where it's a cultural divide. We don't understand.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I'm judging, and I don't know what I'm talking about. Good point. You know, in Japan, they bow. We shake hands. It's not nobody's right or wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
You have a picnic table in your courtyard. They have a pommel horse for martial art yielding gymnasts.
You gotta go with it. You just gotta go. Sure.
It's the thrill of gymnastics with the killer.
In Soviet Russia, horse pommels you.
Oh, thank you, Yakov Smirnoff. It's good to have him in the studio today.
And the last DVD is Personal Shopper. Now, this was the kind of had some horror elements to
it. The Kristen Stewart movie. Yeah, this is
had some ghostiness, right?
It's got some ghostiness in it. Literally, the only shortcoming of this movie is, it's so interesting and inventive. The trailer, I could see how the trailer would sort of mislead you. It's a really cool movie. Kristen Stewart, when she does these little small movies, obviously she's made so much money from the Twilight series, she doesn't need to whatever. Yeah. So she's doing that. I love it when actors do this. They made their big franchise money, and now they're like, I want to do something interesting. I want to do something weird. It's the same people that did Clouds of Saint Maria or whatever, I think. Really cool, interesting movie. It's worth watching. It was in the theaters for like, you know, a week or something. So get it on DVD and check it out. It's a fantastic movie. Kristen Stewart, I think, does a really good job in it.
You know what I liked her in was, and it was a small movie. It was years ago. It was like some sort of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts spinoff whatever.
Oh, The Runaways?
Yeah. The Runaways, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought she was great in it. And that's who that movie I fell in love with, the guy that's in it that plays the manager who's now in like Michael. He's got a really interesting last name, not like Diamond, but you'll know who I'm talking about. I'm sorry, I can't. But he's good in absolutely everything.
Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. And Kristen Stewart, Dakota Fanning's in it.
I love that movie.
Yeah, Kristen Stewart plays Joan Jett. It's a really interesting film. Yeah. That was a really cool movie too.
Yeah.
That's what I love. She's doing all these interesting movies because she can.
I thought that was really cool. I was like, wait, is that that's that one from Twilight? I hadn't even seen the Twilights, and I saw that and then wound up getting in like a Twilight wormhole. But yeah, that was good.
Clouds of Sils Maria is another one I would recommend. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
It's kind of like an All About Eve, that movie, isn't it?
Kind of. I mean, she plays supporting in it. And she's great in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting what she's done.
So, and the site spotlight and the fan feedback, we will be doing the weekly film news live for the Patreon subscribers. Mm-hmm. We'll be recording that later this evening. And also, you can read about all the film news that is going on right now. And there's a fairly large dose of Harvey Weinstein material in there that Neil, he takes care of it.
Yeah, to that end, I recorded this for Political Vigilante, but there's Chris and I talking about how we can fix this creep culture in Hollywood. If it is fixable, but like, so that's, if you go to my youtube.com/GrahamElwood, you'll see Chris and I talking in the garage about this.
And,
all the fucking celebrities like, oh, I can't believe this. You knew.
Yeah,
fuck off. Yeah. You so knew what he was doing. Now you're just saving your asses.
Yeah, the worst kept secret.
Yeah.
Oh, no one. They just go, I wasn't there. I didn't see it. No, you have other senses, Jackhole.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No one talked about
no
it?
One,
no,
no
one talked about it.
Ever?
No one mentioned it ever, huh?
Nobody gossips on film sets.
Yeah.
Mm.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
Liars.
Yeah, no one says anything. Everyone minds their own business.
Everyone minds their own. That's what Hollywood is. Everybody minding their own business.
Just all those parties are so quiet. People are talking politics and sports.
That's what happens.
It's so interesting. The state of our education system. Not who's banging who. Okay. Sure.
But yeah, guys, leave your comments on our YouTube channel and all over the place, and we'll
please do
read them.
And premiering this week, Jigsaw. This is, I guess people thought it was time for another Saw movie. I'm not sure if it is or not. We'll see.
But I bet you it'll do well, because it's like,
it's, you know,
is it the fans of these movies? They're just like, yay, Jigsaw's back?
You know, it's one of those things that it's like, it's reviewer proof, and it's like, you know, it's a marketing department decides to do this, and it will be successful because, A, the budget will be low. B, it's Halloween.
No-name actors.
Yeah. And, you know, C, it has like that recognizable franchise to it, so I'm sure it'll do fine regardless of the quality of the film.
Like, I would love to know the stats on the walk-up business to this Halloween weekend.
Right.
You know, people are like, I just want to be scared. Oh, Jigsaw. Yeah, well, let's go.
Yeah,
what's it, 8:15?
Yeah. Okay. That or Happy Death Day. Those are
the, those are the two ones they're going to. All right.
And, you know, Happy Death Day, Madea Halloween made more money than Happy Death Day.
Of course,
but
it did.
But here's the thing. These movies are so low budget, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They're still profitable. You know, the movie makes 8 to 10 million in an opening weekend, but it costs 2 to 4.
Yeah.
They're already made their money back. So the next movie is Suburbicon. I got to say, I'm not really jazzed for this movie. I was watching it, and it really felt like a Coen Brothers movie made without the Coen Brothers.
It's just like, I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. I like George Clooney as a director. I mean, I did like Matt Damon until now. He was like, oh, I didn't know what was going on with Harvey Weinstein. Now I'm like, maybe all you guys are just filthy liars that knew all this shit was happening, and you turned the other way because Harvey Weinstein was making you all millionaires. So
right.
I don't know that I can support your fucking films.
Well, then there'll be nothing left to watch.
Fine by me.
The best is, whatever, I can't go down this tunnel. It was just the Ben Affleck, like, oh, I didn't know. And then 2 days later, he has to apologize for groping someone. And you're like,
right.
But you're like the creepiest.
Yeah.
And
your brother.
Your brother. Mm-hmm. Super creepy.
Yeah. He's like, listen, I didn't know I would have said something. P.S. Sorry. Fill in the blank that I groped these women throughout these years. You're like, what?
It's just, I can't even. Yeah.
Well, maybe that was the excuse. Hey, I may have groped a few women, but I'm no Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. I'm not my brother.
Yeah.
Just so
another guy that I knew was doing this and played, pretended I didn't
know.
We'll
make it all relative. And the next movie is the Miles Teller PTSD movie, Thank You for Your Service.
This movie looks really good. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this. There have been, you know, Hurt Locker. There's been a couple other movies about like Iraq vets coming back.
We saw one at the Albuquerque Film Festival. Wasn't it The Dry Land?
Yeah, The Dry
with
Land.
With America Ferrara.
With America Ferrara. That never got a wide release. That's a decent movie.
Yes.
They really, this one seems like the first sort of big budget. I was talking to a friend of mine that was a vet that served over there, and he made an interesting point. When the war was still going on at full throttle.
Full throttle.
was he goes the best Vietnam movies came out after Vietnam War had ended.
Right.
When you have some time to sort of process it and to get some vets to write some stories and you get to hear from them. So, like Deer Hunter and all that came after. So I feel like maybe this is. Because I've been saying
Deer Hunter was an unbelievable,
unbelievable film. And I think this generation needs a movie like that. I mean, Hurt Locker was good. It was dealing, but the war was still going on. And as we know, Lucas Lensman, who listened to the show, he was a vet who had some technical issues with that film. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But like, there's been some other movies that have tried to stop. Loss, I think, was called one with Ryan Phillippe. But this, to me, looks like it's this generation's dealing with the specific PTSD of this war and the coming home from this war. And that generation, you know, the millennials that, like, were in high school when 9/11 happened or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So and Miles Teller, I think, is a fine actor. So I'm really I saw the trailer for it last night ahead of Marshall, and I was like, it was like my second or third time watching. I was like, this
I actually go see that. I saw the trailer and I like him. Yeah. I didn't like him at first, but then I realized I think he was playing characters that were so unlikable.
He grows on you.
But then he really the drummer movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nailing it with titles today.
He's terrible in the Divergent movies. If you ever watched it,
yeah, that's the first time I saw him. I was like, ooh,
that's but not his fault.
Gets better no. and better, mm-hmm. and yeah, that's true. They are just like I have to fill my brain space for 2 hours. But he does, I like him more and more, and I think he's a good actor.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. So he started out just as the high school party boy.
Yeah.
So you didn't really get to see his range as an actor, and then it was Whiplash, is the movie
Whiplash,
you're talking
yeah.
about
right.
that he got into, and then of course he did the Divergence and stuff like that, but then. You know, he
and Fantastic Four
and Fantastic
oh,
Four
forgot about
War Dogs.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're you know.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of stuff.
Okay.
I didn't like
we're
that
gonna
movie, but yeah.
We're gonna have to forgive him on some stuff.
Yeah.
But no, this might be the.
The boxing one too. I didn't see that, but wasn't he? Didn't he have a boxing one?
I think he did.
Where he played like.
Oh, I don't know.
Thinking of Jake Gyllenhaal? No,
Boom Boom Camacho right. or whatever. I think it's that is a name.
I think Ray Boom Boom Mancini.
Maybe. Hector Macho Camacho and Boom Boom. Did I put them two together? But I'm almost positive he had a big old
He had a boxing movie?
I don't see it here.
All right, we'll have to make
I don't see it. I don't think. I think you might be confusing with somebody else.
What does Wikipedia say? Miles Teller boxing movie. Go. Yeah.
I mean, he did The Spectacular Now.
No, he.
Oh, that
he,
was a great movie.
He played a boxer because I saw an interview.
Bleed for this.
Oh, okay.
It was out last year.
And he played the guy because I remember that guy fighting with my sports brain. The only thing I remember is sports.
Well, it just says his character's name is Vinny.
Vinny Parisi. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a. Yeah. He did play a tree. So that got very little traction. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Just because I saw an interview with him in the boxer. That's okay. Right.
Cool. That's good. I didn't know about that movie. But yeah, I think Thank You for Your Service is going to be like his.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm a solid actor now. I'm not just right. the wacky high school college kid party guy or whatever. So.
Wow. That is our show.
That is
I
our
think
show.
This is a supersized show.
This was
this
big
went,
one.
This went a little long.
It's good.
Yeah. All right. So, Aaron, where can people find you on the internet?
You know, I erased my social media presence. I'm kidding. Oh. It's Aaron.
I was going to say good for you.
I know. That's when I quit and just go out with a blaze of glory. It's AaronKFoley.com is my website. Tour dates on there. And Twitter's at Aaron Foley Comic. That's enough.
Podcast,
yes. I should promote. I actually love, that's like the biggest joy in my life is talking sports. It's Sports Without Balls. It's on All Things Comedy. It's on iTunes. It's free. It's fun. And we just, we talk a lot of sports. It's awesome. We just joke around and I scream and rant on how I'm obsessed with all of it and I can't stop.
Well, I'll be hopefully back on when the WNBA starts back up because I love you. You're such a refuge for me because there's no one else.
I know.
I can talk. Like, I feel like.
That's why it's one of like, my favorite episodes. I was like, Graham and I were just like nerded out. It was the best.
Because it's hard to find. Because
Trish is like, I don't like. And I'm like, I got to get someone on that loves it as much as I do.
I know. Because everyone else either. Like, I know I have friends that are basketball fans and they'll kind of go, oh, okay. Like, they won't. They'll like, oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
Or they're just. You know, it'll be like women who are like, oh, I want to support that, but I don't know much about the league, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But with you, I don't have to go, no, she was the MVP two years ago. Like,
I have a poster for all over my bed.
I have the 2016 WNBA champ Sparks on my fridge. I have that team photo on my fridge.
So awesome.
So, yeah, Sports Without Balls, that'll also be at the ATC Festival this weekend in Phoenix.
Saturday, 7:30 to 9:00.
We will be there. Comedy Film Nerds will be Thursday at 3:00 at the pop-up studio. And then,
which is free to attend.
Free to attend. And then doing sets Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Check that out. Sunday, the 29th, I am hosting the FNX Stand-Up Comedy Showcase. It's this Native American, well, World Indigenous People TV channel is going to start doing some stand-up shows that I'm going to be heavily involved with. So come, that's this Sunday, the 29th at 7 p.m. at Flappers in Burbank. That is on my website, grahamelwood.com. And, of course, go to our YouTube channel and click on all that business.
Absolutely. And the new episode of Conversations from the Abyss is out, starring Graham Elwood and Janet Varney, about a new couple moves into a new house and finds something very off about it. And really nice performances by both of you.
It was really cool doing that with Janet. And it's a great script. It was really fun. So. Thanks, everybody at ATC. Thank you, Aaron Brungardt. And we'll see you in Phoenix on the ATC Mystery Machine solving crimes along the desert. thank you, Aaron Foley, for being on our show.
You guys, it felt like 5 minutes. You're so delightful and easy to talk to. So thanks. I mean that. Some podcasts you do, you're like, oh, Christ.
Oh, boy.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Full throttle.